All right, Jetta Cameron, John Ritchie on this Monday morning. Big show today. It'll include Ray Dittinger at 7:30 reacting to yesterday's game, and Seth Joyner at 9 o'clock in studio with us for an entire hour. We'll also get a NovaCare injury report on some very notable injuries the Eagles suffered yesterday. We'll get to that soon, but let's actually just ourselves first dive into the Devontae issue. So let me say this. Let me play C.J. Gardner-Johnson first, and then I'll give you my thoughts. Here's C.J. G.J. after the game on the Devontae hit.
Man, that's the dirtiest I ever saw in football, bro. Y'all obviously saw forward progression was stopped. I mean, for them to take a cheap shot on one of our key players, it goes to show you what type of team that is.
All right, so I agree with about half of what he said, but not the main point he's saying. I don't think it's the player's fault on the Saints at all. It's the referee's fault 100% the whistle hadn't blown. Devontae catches the ball at the 36. He is struck by the guy. Now, is it a hard, tough, brutal hit? Brutal. He is struck by that player at the 31. He is stopped at the 36 and begins to go backwards. 36, 35, 34, 33, 32, 31. The whistle still hasn't blown. Devontae Smith's injury is 100% on the officials yesterday that didn't blow their whistle. It was he might miss time. I mean, that was brutal.
Oh, he was out. Fred Johnson said he was out cold.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that was really hard to see. That was tough to watch, and I blame the refs 1,000,000% on this one. Blow the freaking whistle. That's why you got it, man. It's like a referee in boxing. You have a responsibility to protect those in the ring.
Right.
And those referees did not protect him. Referee, umpire, you know what I mean. All the people with a whistle, they didn't do their job.
And Devontae Smith is like a piece of iron.
Oh,
I mean, he really is tough. He didn't have a chance when you hang him out to dry like that. He was stopped. He was going the other direction. He was hit in the back of the head. You know, That was unbelievable.
It was awful. All right, let's get more on this and some of the other key injuries yesterday from Dr. Ryan Schreider from, of course, the NovaCare with the Temple Orthopedic Surgery and Sports Medicine, the NovaCare Rehabilitation Injury Segment, and Dr. Schreider joins us right now. Good morning, Doc.
Yeah, good morning, guys.
All right, so Doc, we appreciate you joining us here. I wish there wasn't so many injuries to go through, but let's try to move through them. Devontae, the concussion. If a player is knocked out cold, and as Rhea said, that's been stated, what could that mean? I hate to put it in football terms, but I will. What could it mean related to 6 days from now when the Eagles have another game?
Yeah, great question. I think the fact that they have the long week this week is good for Devontae and good for this diagnosis. Being knocked out or having a loss of consciousness can be part of a normal concussion or a mild traumatic brain injury.
Jeez.
That can be normal. Obviously, there's some other more red flag or more emergent diagnoses, and I'm sure he's getting taken care of by the medical team. Probably game day, and then especially this morning, he's going to be reassessed each day and see how he progresses. But yeah, I agree with you. That was a tough hit. I mean, there's an inherent risk every time he steps out on there. But oof, I mean,
brutal.
I agree. He couldn't. I think the big thing was he couldn't protect himself. I mean, it hits her. He took the first two hits, but that second, whatever that third hit was, yeah, that was a, you know, head to head, and he went down pretty hard. But
and Doc, Lane Johnson left with a concussion also, and Fox Sports reported he was vomiting on the sideline. Mm-hmm. That must indicate a higher level of severity if that's happening
or
correct?
Not. You tell us. Yeah, if a guy's throwing up, does that make it generally worse?
No, I don't think it's a grade. It's kind of how it's more about the symptoms that he's getting. And some of those symptoms can be accentuated at the initial contact, vomiting, loss of consciousness. Those are the, higher, red flag type symptoms, but they're assessed, they're looked at. Vomiting can be a sign of increased pressure into the brain. So again, I wouldn't be surprised if particularly both of those guys had further imaging, whether that's a CT scan either yesterday or certainly today. And I'm sure they were checked on. I mean, that's a long plane ride from New Orleans back to Philly.
Yeah, you know, this is one of those things. It's just I hate talking football. And you know, let me just say this. I've said this before in the show, but I'll say it again. I thought one of the most fascinating phone calls, Doc, I had on the air was about 15 years ago. A caller called up and said, "I wish when you guys talked about concussions, you called them something else, because concussion almost sounds like a weak term for this." Just say the guy suffered a brain injury yesterday.
Yeah,
Devontae Smith suffered a brain injury yesterday. He may play 6 days from now. And, like, it puts it in a starker term. You
but
know what
also,
I mean?
Doc, it seems like these brain injuries that our players suffered yesterday were more severe than what I'm accustomed to seeing, like on a run-of-the-mill Sunday, because of these symptoms that we are now aware of. You know, the vomiting, the unconsciousness.
That's brutal.
I mean, that has to change the level of severity in everyone's mind.
Yeah, no. It's still a spectrum of diagnoses, and it's sometimes the worst looking concussions can improve quickly. Sometimes a mild, you know, a guy that hits his head, kind of getting tackled on the back and hits his head on the turf, can take upwards of 2 to 3 weeks. These guys are hydrated well, they eat healthy, they are top, you know, athletes, and I do think they'll recover. But yeah, when it comes to our brain, I mean, every concussion, even each player's concussion, can be completely different. That just goes to show the mystery of
big time.
Our brain.
Look, we've seen that. We saw it in some of the notable hockey players the Flyers have had through the years. Doc, let's get one more in here, and that's Britton Covey. So, doesn't finish the game, arm in a sling in the locker room after the game. What are the chances a player with an arm in a sling without knowing the injury plays 6 days from now?
Yeah.
So crystal ball, I'm guessing it was probably an AC sprain, a acromioclavicular sprain, so a shoulder separation. And they can be graded. Usually it's like a grade 1 to 2, sometimes 3. And they can be extremely painful, and they're treated non-surgical. If it was a fracture of the clavicle, like a collarbone fracture, that's maybe a different story. But those are pretty painful as well. You could be looking at a couple weeks for from a shoulder separation. But if it's a fracture, it could be a little bit longer. But my bet would be a shoulder separation, so an AC. So hopefully, maybe 2 to 3 weeks.
Well, I can tell you all about an AC separation, Joe.
Good Lord. Not fun. All right, Doc, we appreciate it. Dr. Ryan Schreider, orthopedic surgeon at Temple Orthopedic Surgery and Sports Medicine, who specializes in sports medicine, including all these concussion stuff we're talking about. For more on Dr. Schreider and all the other doctors, templehealth.org. That's the website, templehealth.org, the NovaCare Rehabilitation Injury Segment. Thanks, Doc.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it, my man. 215-592-9494. Coming up, Sirianni. I thought the two most notable things he said after the game. All right, great to be with you on this Monday morning. So we've gone in a lot of directions with the show today, as we always do on all shows, and particularly Mondays when there's a lot to digest from a game. But let's not lose sight of a couple key, I'm going to call them facts. You can call them an opinion. I'll call them facts. Number one, it's great the Eagles won. Number two, they could have been to this point 3-0 or 0-3. They happen to be 2-1. I mean, clearly all three of these games were winnable and losable right on down to the end. It's good that they are above the 500 ledger, but, you know, they've played with fire this year. Number three, they won this game yesterday to a large extent in spite of Nick Sirianni. I give him credit for the fight that I do believe he infuses in the team. I mean, I think a lot of athletes naturally have that, but I think Sirianni really makes a real point of emphasis to have his team dig in like that, and that's good. And good for him to do that, but he did more harm than good yesterday. That's just a fact. I mean, this game was closer than it should have been, and he made decisions that I know in the moment led a lot of people to call for his job, whether it would be in the immediate or, you know, when this whole thing's over this season.
He talks about improving 1% every day, you know, in some way. Does it feel like we're getting an improved version of Nick Sirianni from previous years?
No, I mean,
it doesn't.
Not
Does it
at all.
Feel like we're getting an improved version just in from in previous incarnations, like whatever his new role is, it doesn't seem to be as effective.
No question. And then, you know, the Hurts thing, I mean, it's it kind of puts your head in a blender, and you got to figure out how you come out on all of it. I mean, there's a lot of good and there's a lot of bad. I think he's a slightly above average quarterback that in the next year or two, the Eagles are going to have to figure out if they can either A, get him better, or B, choose to keep a slightly above average quarterback or just move off him. Because, you know, he's done a lot really bad this year, and he's done a lot really good this year. And
he's turned it over six times. It is uncharacteristic. Yeah.
But it's not just
Let's give him a chance.
We're giving him a chance.
Get this offense down. Yeah. Look, I still think I have this sinking feeling that because training camp is the way training camp is, and they don't even play football, and they don't even put pads on, they don't even tackle people or hit anybody or do any of that stuff, I have a sinking feeling that they'll probably not be fully where they need to be from a football perspective for a month. You know, for that first month of the season, for the first four games.
Can I just ask a question?
Just like Nick Sirianni told us last year, hey, it feels like we're not going to be where we need to be for a month. And hey, maybe we'll address the way we prepare these guys next year in training camp.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Just, I'm going to try to hold this on this with you here. Is next week the last week you're going to say that?
Say what?
And I'm not saying you're necessarily wrong. I'm just saying they didn't play preseason games. They didn't go harder in training camp. Is next week the last time we hear about that in relation?
Because at some point, it's the fourth week.
No, I know. I mean, listen.
I think we've started slowly for a variety of reasons, but I do think the fact that we didn't practice and play football affected us negatively.
But at some point, that's over. Is my point. I mean, that's not an October 20th issue.
I think it's clear that it can be over now that we've been playing for a month, like we normally would.
That's what I'm trying to get.
You're putting an end date on this?
Yeah. Well, I am, because here's my point. Like, I happen to believe that the negative side of Jalen is more because it's just what he is.
Yeah, it's a continuation from last year. Sam Darnold's playing great, and he wasn't being prepared to do everything. Yeah. You know,
Sam Darnold's been around for a long time.
I know he's been around.
But not playing like this. Not that much longer than Jalen. I mean, Jalen was 2020. Darnold was what, 2018? 19?
He's been around for a long time.
Well, Jalen's probably started more games in the league, for what it's worth, because Sam Darnold got benched a lot of years there. All right, let's go to the phones. 215-592-9494. Ray Dittinger in about 6 minutes. Bad of the Bone Award shortly. Eleanor right now in West Philadelphia. Good morning, Eleanor.
Good morning. I just had one quick thing to say. Let's not forget that Braden, our punter, when they blocked his kick, if he hadn't tackled that guy, we could have been looking at the other team with six or seven more points.
Look, there's that. Look, there's always a couple plays in a game like that. There's that. There's the Saints receiver that dropped the ball in the end zone that was contested but clearly could have been caught. I mean, there were a couple things here in this game, both ways, that if one or two things goes different, the outcome's different.
That's right. The
tackle on the block punt saved 4 points. Just did. Or I think it was, right? Or did that one net it out to a three, or did they get stopped there? I'd have to look up my notes. I don't think they scored a touchdown that drive. I'll look it up.
All right. Take care.
Eleanor, appreciate it.
Thanks,
all right,
Eleanor.
Bad of the Bone Award. We do it every single Monday at this time after a game. When they win, it's game balls. When they lose, it's blame balls. Fortunately, and Rhea, it was not looking so good there for a while yesterday.
No, it was not.
I think we were all getting ready to hand out some blame balls. Seltzer, let's do Bad of the Bone Award. Now, the rule is you got to pick an individual. Can't pick a group. Got to pick an individual to hand a game ball to. Man, I love when they win and we get to do this. I do wish they'd won a little bit more comfortably, but they got the dub. John Ritchie, the first game ball, you get to give it to someone. Who you handed it to?
I'm going to stick by the run game and Saquon Barkley. I love the fact that we've got a bell cow lean into him heavily back. Saquon was awesome. Despite the fact that he only had 5 carries in the first half, we did not get him the ball enough. But, you know, in part because we were getting it to other players who certainly deserved it and had awesome games themselves. But Saquon, it was wonderful to see the production again. We know we can count on you when we need you. all it requires, our run game to work, is reps. Just hand the ball to this man.
And he's amazing.
Eventually, he'll go and score for you.
He's incredible.
Anywhere on the field. He is not lost. He hasn't lost a step.
No.
He looks quicker than I've ever seen, because I've never paid this close attention to him. The guy, it's a miracle the way he can move. He's a 235-pound guy who ran faster than anyone else has run in the world in the NFL this year, except for one person. Like, that's insane.
It's incredible.
What we have on our team, for those of you who love football and can think back to the 80s, the mid-80s, and, man, Bo knows. We got Bo Jackson running up the tunnel on our team. That's our running back.
Yeah, I like that, John.
It's so exciting that that's going to carry the offense through thick and thin. And right now, you know, there's some thick because it's not all smooth.
Right.
Our team's not where it needs to be. And right now the run game helps us stay afloat.
All right. Saquon, obviously incredibly worthy. Seltzer, game ball, who are you going
with? I'll leave a certain defensive player on the board for Rhea, who I know she's going to take. I'll go with the other offensive star of that game. I mean, I was ripping him this week. I was like, Dallas Goedert, not a top five tight end. You know, enough with that. You know, when's he going to actually show up in a game where they desperately need him?
Yep.
My bad. Hand up. He was awesome.
Great.
I mean,
yep.
10 for 170 was just absolutely phenomenal. And some of those catches were super impressive.
And I'm not
awesome
gonna,
game.
Seltzer, yeah. I'm not going to back off this. Keep it going.
Damn straight.
And that's him. That's Hurts.
And Kellen.
That's play design.
They schemed it.
Keep
yep.
it going. Because it's there.
You planned.
So keep it going. Rhea, give me a game ball. Give someone else a game ball. Who's it going to?
I'm not sure that I'm picking the guy that James thinks I'm going to pick.
Yeah.
Jordan Davis?
No,
ooh, I was thinking the other guy.
Yeah,
in the middle there.
Here's where the reason is. His sack of David Carr on their second drive of the game, who I can only imagine that Derek Carr was terrified of seeing him closing on him. So I thought that set a tremendous tone for the defense, the way those two played together. But I thought I thought it made Carr a little skittish. Because every time everybody started coming after him, he was throwing the ball into the ground.
Carr had a bad day.
Yeah, but I thought the tone was set by Jordan, all 330 pounds falling on him.
So I did not expect who I'm going to go with to get to me here. I always go fourth, and obviously I'm going to take, because he's still available, I'm going to take Jalen Carter. It's like when the Eagles drafted him at 9 a few years ago. It's like, oh, he's still available?
Yeah, he's still
okay,
here, all right.
I'll take him. So I will just tell you, by way of saying Jalen Carter, who was phenomenal, who I thought I would be taking with the fourth pick for Bat of the Bone Award, because I didn't think Jordan Davis was going to get set, although he did nice things. I want to give, let's call it half a game ball.
Is Jordan Davis actually listed at 330?
I mean, the guy's got to be like 370.
That's a joke. 330?
I thought,
he's listed,
and I want to give a nod. I want to give a nod to Jeff Stoutland.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, guys, you lose your right side of the line, one of whom is one of the best offensive linemen of this era in pro football. And by the way, you also don't have two wide receivers that are studs, which mean it's the more important that the offensive line control the game. And Jeff Stoutland, with his backups and mix and matching, like, if you don't have Jeff Stoutland, Seltzer, are we going to praise Chip Kelly for hiring him 10 years?
Yeah, it's the best thing he ever did.
Absolutely, man. Whatever it took to get him here, thank you.
Joe, the crazy part about that is the night before, it was in the Inquirer, they had Lane Johnson. Stoutland had him get up and speak to the position group.
Yep.
And he specifically pointed out the backups. That be ready.
That's
important. I mean, it was like really cool.
I got to tell you, I was very tempted with the game ball to go to Nick Sirianni today.
Well, it is funny because you say Stoutland, Fangio could have been one of our answers too.
I know.
Especially after the way that last game ended.
I know.
I mean, Fangio was awesome. Against 92 points coming in.
He
like,
was.
Awesome.
And he had those guys charged up. You saw in the first play of the game, there was a quick stop made, I think on a run play, I believe. And immediately you saw immense emotion from Bryce Huff. And that said to me, all right, they got inside him this week and said, dude, like, it is time to bring it time.
So, 18 snaps.
I loved the very first play of the game.
How many?
18.
Yeah, that's not good.
No.
And
well,
I'm not. And I wasn't implying he played well.
No.
I was just implying at least you saw some emotion, which told
you
me they tried to get him to play better.
But Vic knows.
It didn't
matter how much money he's making.
Yeah.
He played him 18 snaps.
All right,
they're no longer continuing the charade.
Yeah.
Like, he's not in there.
Yeah.
In
that's bad
running situations. I thought the very first play of our defensive game, the very first defensive snap,
yep.
Jordan Davis, as he is beginning to get moved, I think he was getting double teamed, he dropped to a knee, like right there in the middle of the field, dropped to a knee, and it was the coolest thing in the world because it worked. It stymied the double team, and they realized, holy cow, this guy is for real. We can't move him when he does that. Oh, it really was like roadblock thrown in the middle of the road, bam, they hit it, and that set the stage, that set the tone for the rest of the day. That D-line did an awesome job.
Yeah, all right, they really did. So obviously some key areas how the Eagles won the game. We know there was a lot of areas, though, that made it an incredibly close game where the Eagles did a lot wrong. All of it coming up with Ray Dittinger. Ray Diddy joins us, his post-game reaction coming up in 1 minute's time. Hey, let me tell you about Family and Company Jewelers. On Route 70 in Marlton, New Jersey, South Jersey's diamond destination, and your trusted jewelers for quality service and price. You can choose from the largest selection of engagement rings in the area, or you can have their master jewelers create a custom one-of-a-kind ring just for your special day. Guys, if you're thinking about popping the question, well, pop it, but before you do, make sure you get to Family and Company Jewelers to purchase that ring. Family and Company Jewelers, South Jersey's diamond destination, and of course, a spot not only in the store to see all the incredible merchandise, but also online. You can view their showroom online at familyjewelers.com if you want to start that way. Familyjewelers.com, great people, experts at what they do, an incredible array of jewelry. Get there, Family and Company Jewelers, South Jersey's diamond destination. All right, Ray Dittinger joins us every single Monday, typically at 7:55 after a game. We move Ray up a few minutes here today, though, to get his thoughts at this time. And Ray is brought to us by Verizon. Phones, they're not made to be broken, but life does happen. So when your phone breaks, Verizon's got you. Trade in any phone at your local Verizon store in any condition, guaranteed, and get a great deal on one of the best 5G phones with the unlimited ultimate. All right, let's talk to the Diddy, Ray Dittinger. Good morning, Ray.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Doing well, great, Ray. Man. Always better when we talk to you, Ray. All right, so Ray, this is going to be one of those things where we're going to go to the end, and then we're going to back it up and go earlier. So let's just start with this. Your biggest headline takeaway when that game ended, in the first 5 minutes after the game, you're thinking what?
First thing I'm thinking is it's, hello, Dallas Goedert. How nice to welcome you back to the offense. You know, I mean, to me, that was one of the things that I was really having scratching my head through the first two games is how are you not making him a bigger part of the offense? How, you know, I know it's all well and good to say that he's become a really good blocker. Yeah, he has, but let's not neglect what a great receiver he is. And I thought that it amazed me how little they were utilizing him. And just a couple times that he would get a target, I mean, there were all these little dinky-dunky kinds of things, and he's much more than that. And especially in a situation where you were without A.J. Brown, when you were without one of your big-time playmakers, this guy's a big-time playmaker. Well, use him, you know? And I thought that, and certainly yesterday, I mean, a career game for him, 10 catches, 170 yards. I mean, he was, in many ways, the difference in this game. And That was my feeling after the game. Grateful the defense played well and all, but if you're asking me what was my one big thought, it was great to see Dallas Goedert back in the offense. Now let's try and keep him there for the rest of the season.
So, Ray, let's go about an hour before the end of the game. So it's around 3 o'clock, 3:15. Eagles still have a goose egg up on the board. At that time, what were you thinking about Jalen Hurts? What were you thinking about Nick Sirianni?
My concern, you know, you have to be concerned about Hurts. I mean, you just do. I mean, he's just making too many mistakes. He's just making too many mistakes. And it's going to be very hard to keep winning if he's going to keep making mistakes the way he's making them. Do you realize, I mean, we've all talked endlessly about giveaway, takeaway, turnover ratio, how that is the biggest single indicator of wins and losses in the NFL. It just is. I mean, that's the game today. Do you realize the last time, you know how far back you have to go for the last game when the Eagles came out on the plus of giveaway takeaway?
How far back?
Kansas City last year.
That's brutal.
That's crazy.
11, it's been 11 games since you won giveaway takeaway. You didn't even win it yesterday.
Ray, why is this happening? Because Jalen previously, I thought, that was one of his biggest strengths, the decision-making with the RPO stuff and the, I don't know, his parsimoniousness, you know, like with the football, like the way that he valued the ball, and he just was a non-turnover creator. Now, you know, yesterday, what was that? His sixth turnover of the season. It just doesn't make any sense to me that going back to last year, when we know things were awry with the offensive coordinator, but we thought they were fixed now, why is it he's become a turnover creator? Which is the real Jalen Hurts?
Good question. I think everybody's asking it, including the coaches. Yeah, you're right. I mean, before this spate of mistakes and mental mistakes, decision making mistakes, which are on him. I mean, there's no getting around that. You're right. He didn't turn the ball over. He made consistently good decisions with the ball, and he never turned it over in the red zone. Well, now he's throwing end zone interceptions like every week, you know. And
you just
can't win that way. I mean, they pulled it out yesterday, and did they need that one. I mean, that was the game that kind of maybe has a chance to get him back on track, but to really pull this thing together and make a real run, which is what this whole thing is all about,
you need
him to play better. Now, last year, when everything kind of went sideways for everybody over those last 6-7 weeks, he was turning it over like crazy. And I don't want to say forgiving him, but I kind of put it in context in that the defense was so bad. The defense was so terrible over those last 6 weeks. My thought was that Hurts is thinking every time he goes on the field, I got to score a touchdown. You know, I got to score, I got to score 40 points to give us a chance to win, because our defense is just that. Our defense can't stop anybody. So if the quarterback's playing with that mentality that I have to score 40, I have to score in every possession, I have to score a touchdown every time I throw the ball, if he's really feeling that kind of pressure, then he's going to be making bad mistakes. His judgment's going to be clouded. I mean, those kinds of things are going to happen. But that was last year. You know, I was hoping coming back this year that he'd begin to get those things out of his game. Now, we haven't seen that.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't seen that. And, you know, yesterday the interception in the end zone, I mean, people are trying to lay it on Devontae Smith. I mean, I've seen Devontae Smith run better routes than that. I mean, I will say that. But, I mean, the Honey Badger's sitting on that thing the whole way. I mean, he's got that ball lined up the whole way. That's a ball you just can't throw. I mean, and he's been doing that way too much. Now, to his credit, I mean, at the end of the game, I mean, things are pretty dire. I mean, my God, you're losing. There's a minute to go. It's 3rd and 16, deep in your own end of the field. He pulls it out and finds a way to win. And ultimately, that is the bottom line here. But moving forward, if you're going to really get this season right and get this team moving in the direction everybody thought at the beginning of the year they were going to move, the quarterback has to play better, more consistent football.
Sure. Do you see improvement in the way he's keeping his eyes downfield longer, the way that we are seeing a pocket that he's, you know, stepping up into this season? Are there differences, or is it more of, you know, the same sort of what you've come to expect, which is not quite enough?
I think you got to factor in the idea that his best receiver isn't there, you know, and that changes the equation a lot. You know, you take AJ Brown out of the offense, that changes a lot.
Sure.
But I mean, there are a couple things that I do like. I think that he's been, in terms of when he takes off and running the ball, I think he's been more decisive in doing that.
Oh, my gosh. And he looks so good, like so healthy when he does that this year compared to what I was fearing.
Yes, for sure. I mean, that's a plus. Some of the decisions with the ball in his hand, not so good. I think he's holding the ball too long again. I think there's some things they just have to work out. I mean, you've got a new offense. You got a new offensive coordinator. I mean, there's some things in the new offense I think look pretty good to me. I like some of the motion. I like some of the formation changes.
Yeah.
There's certainly more nuance to this offense, the way Kellen Moore's running it. That was necessary, and it's welcome. But a lot of it comes down to, you know, what the quarterback's seeing and what he's doing with the ball in his hands. And on a week-to-week basis, he just has to become more consistent for this team to keep winning football games.
Ray, let's talk about, and Ray Dittinger with us, as he will be every Monday following an Eagles game here on WIP the next day. So, Ray, let's talk about the head coach. I want to play a game called True or False. We've heard of that game before, right? So that's a basic one, right, Seltzer?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
They play that in kindergarten,
pretty
I think.
Simple.
All right. So, Ray, here's how this game goes. I'm going to make a statement and then ask you a question. While Nick Sirianni deserves credit for the team showing fight and resiliency, to a large extent yesterday, the team won in spite of Nick Sirianni. True or false, Ray?
True. True.
How concerned are you with the head coach right now?
Concerned. Because I think he's finding his way. You know, I think he's sort of cast this new role for himself where he's turning the offense over to Kellen Moore, he's turning the defense over to Vic Fangio, and he's going to be sort of the overseer head coach. He's going to be the head coach.
Ray, you said he cast that role for himself. Do you feel as though that is the case, or the organization cast that role for him? You know, like, it does. The semantics do make a difference in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, it does. But the fact of the matter is, that's where you are. You know, I mean, whether he came upon this idea on his own, or whether the people above him in the organization came to him and said, "Hey, this is the way it's going to be." The fact is, that's what you're dealing with. And okay, well, it's different, and he has to figure out the difference. I mean, some of the decisions he made yesterday were just baffling to me, mm-hmm. frankly. I mean, the going for it at the end of the half made no sense. I just don't know how you even begin to try to justify that, because where you are in that situation, even if you make it, you're probably going to want kicking a field goal anyway.
Correct.
So if that's the case, then
it's a one play difference.
It, okay. Why,
yeah.
why risk not getting on a fourth down and getting nothing in a half when you're sitting on a donut? I mean, I don't understand that. And of course, you could talk endlessly about some of the decisions that were made last week. I think that I accept the fact and I recognize the fact that things have changed in the on-field, in-game decision-making process there. You probably got all those coaches are trying to find their way, figuring out exactly what their role is. I think it's pretty clear for Kellen Moore, and I think Vic Fangio, they kind of know what they're doing. But I think Nick is the guy who has to figure out what he's going to be doing in it. And I think he's still – some of the decisions he's making now, I think he's trying to press the aggressive aspect of it to try and get this team back on track. But I think there are sometimes – not all situations are created equal. And there are times when I know he likes to go forward on fourth down, and I know he likes to be aggressive. And listen, here's the other part of it, okay? The other part of it is we all know that there is a whole wing of the NovaCare building that is full of analytics people. I mean, they have one whole side of their building is analytics people. And sometimes when Nick is doing stuff, we know that analytics people in most of those situations will want to go for it. You know, they're inclined to go for it on fourth down, and they will give you all the numbers and all the stats to support that side of the argument. Nick knows that if he makes a decision in a game that is contrary to that, that if he's going to, it's fourth down, oh man, in this situation, I don't think we should go for it. I think we should take the 3 points. There's a part of him that could be thinking, you know, tomorrow when I go in the office, you know, I'm going to have to answer for that. You know, the analytics guys are going to be down here saying, well, why didn't you do that? You know what the numbers are. We told you what the numbers are. In those situations, that's what you're supposed to do. Why did you kick the field goal? Is he bowing to that? If he is, I think it's a mistake.
Totally.
I think as a coach, in the middle of the game, you have to make those decisions based on what your good common football sense tells you to
do. Absolutely, yeah. So it sounds like you feel that Nick is sort of like feeling his way into like where he's supposed to coach from this season. Have you ever seen a team where the head coach is sort of unsure of what his role was during a season? I mean, I'm putting that wrong.
Well, let me say that, John, let me say this. I don't think it's as unsure as you think it is. First off, and we're going to play this audio in a moment, we found out yesterday, post-game, Sirianni has more of a hand in this than we thought prior to the game, because he announced after the game that he called the play on fourth and one that was the fake and let's have Saquon run it. So, you know,
did you believe him?
100%, million percent. So, I mean, Ray, that was, I thought, a very Matter of fact, let's play that audio. James, I want to play this because this ties into it. I mean, Ray, we speculated last week whether the head coach even had the authority from the owner and the general manager to override a play call of the offense coordinator. We found out yesterday very clearly that he does. Let's listen to what Sirianni said.
And just so anyone's wondering, Kellen on that 4th and 1 at the end of the half, I called that, not Kellen. So I called that play at the end of the half. Kellen did not. I called it.
Why?
That's what I thought was best for the football team at that particular case. That was my decision. I did it. It didn't work. And we'll get better. I'll get better from it. That's a play I thought was working in the best situation in that particular case, and it didn't work. And that's not on Kellen. That's not on the players. I put him in a bad spot, and I made that call.
All right, so, Ray, admirable that he steps up and states that, right, obviously taking accountability for it, but also incredibly notable because we wondered last week whether he even had the authority to do that.
Yeah, well, he has to. As the head coach, he has to have oversight. I mean, he's an offensive coach anyway, and – I mean, if you want to hand the play calling off to Kellen Moore, that's fine. I mean, he's done it before successfully, so that's fine. But, I mean, as the head coach, if you hear a call and you know or you feel that it's flat-out wrong, then the head coach has to have the authority to say, no, no, no. No, we're not doing that. We're doing this. I mean, if not, then why is he there? You know, I mean, that's the head coach has to have that responsibility, especially if he is a head coach, if he's an offensive coach, if he's at that side of the ball coach anyway. You know, I'm not so sure I believe what he said. I'm not so sure he wasn't trying to cover for Kellen Moore there.
100%.
Oh, I disagree entirely. You think he lied in that moment?
Yeah, I think it's.
It wouldn't be the first time.
I don't know that.
He lied in Seattle to cover for his players.
Well, I wouldn't say he told us he lied. He tried to come up with an explanation.
Which was ridiculous,
but I wouldn't call it a lie.
I think this is in...
Well, let's just be clear, guys. If Kellen Moore called the 4th and 1 play, not to choose to go for 4th and 1, but that specific play, if Kellen Moore called it, then Sirianni lied yesterday stating what he said. I don't think that happened, but Ray, you and Ree and John all seem to think that happened. Okay.
He takes the bullet for people. That's part of what he thinks is. Go ahead, Ray.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what happened, but I think I certainly think it's entirely possible. I mean, I think it's entirely possible that that thing blew up in their face big time. Okay. And everybody is screaming about what a stupid thing to do. I think maybe in that spot, he's saying, okay, I'm going to step up and take the bullet. Really, that's what I was thinking. But the other part of it is, you should never even had that decision. Okay, just kick the field goal. Okay, just kick the field goal and go into halftime 3-3 and happy with that.
Totally agree.
That's my general feeling about this. I mean, he's just trying to, you know, after that loss on Monday night and then going down into this situation, he was just reaching for stuff that to me didn't make a whole lot of sense, but thought was sending a positive message to the team that I believe in you. I still think we can do this. Okay, let's go out and make it happen. And it almost cost him another game.
Ray, I want to get one more in here. I know your time's a little tight today, so let me get to this question about the defense. Last week, after the game, we felt we had a major problem this year with this defense. Now we should feel what this year about this defense?
I thought yesterday they played very well, extremely well, and showed you that they weren't as bad as everybody was saying they were last week. I mean, last week we were saying that we were wondering if they could play at all.
Right.
Okay. Yesterday they demonstrated that they could, and also demonstrated that in Vic Fangio they had a coach who's capable of making significant adjustments from week to week that can be difference making on the scoreboard, and that's what you saw yesterday. I mean, you saw a lot of five-man front. Okay, he knew what he was dealing with when he went into New Orleans. I mean, he had clearly studied the film of that Saints offense, which was dynamic through the first two games. And he knew that the only way we can deal with this is we got to go five-man front and stop that run. Because everything they had done in the first 2 weeks came off the run. Carr was having a great year. He was completing 70% of his passes, averaging 11 yards an attempt. But it was all working off the run. Everything they were doing was working off the run. So Fangio knew going into this game that our only chance to win this game, to slow this team down, was we got to go five man front, and we got to bring Bond and Dean up closer to the line of scrimmage, And we just got to be solid at the line of scrimmage. And having done that, after having drawn all that stuff up, then we got to get these guys playing better. And, you know, Davis played better significantly.
Yeah.
And Carter played the way Carter's capable of playing. Carter is a difference-making player. He can be a difference-making player. He hadn't been the first two games, but, boy, he sure was yesterday. But a lot of it was the stuff that Vic brought in here, that he came in with a defensive scheme that you put a lot of pressure on his secondary because you go five-man front and you bring up your linebackers to stuff the run. You're asking a lot of the guys on the back end, but they held up, and the guys up front were able to shut down that Saints running attack.
Hey, Ray, great stuff, man. We love having you on the program every Monday after the game. Ray, thanks so much. Have a great day, Ray.
All right, you guys do the same.
Thanks.
There he is, the Diddy, Ray Dininger. So typically, Ray will be with us starting at 7:55 on Mondays. He just, from a scheduling standpoint, needed to move it up a little bit today. Gives us a chance now to get some reaction at 215-592-9494 on the phone lines. We'll remind you, two different Twitter poll questions of the day, both brought to us by Armin Chevrolet. Armin offering huge savings on every leftover 2024 Equinox remaining in inventory. Together, let's drive. ArminChevy.com. First poll question, which individual or group is most responsible for the Eagles' win yesterday? Is it A, Saquon, B, Dallas Goedert, or C, the defense? Second poll question, what stands out to you more from yesterday's Eagles' win? Is it the positives or the negatives? There were a lot of positives. There were a lot of negatives. That's been a trait through three games this year. I mean, look, we know the Eagles don't stink. We also know they're far from elite. I mean, we knew in 04, we could feel pretty early in 2017. We certainly knew, you know, pretty damn early in 2022, there was an elite football team in Philadelphia. This team's not elite. That's clear. They're a work in progress. That's obvious. They're in a weak division. That's pretty clear.
The fact that they're being pulled down by the coaching is clear.
Well, the head coach is causing problems in games. He's making it more difficult. There's no question about that.
And I have a hypothetical for you. Jalen Carter. Mm-hmm. Jalen Carter, does it worry you that he showed us in this game that the first two games of the season he underperformed?
Of course.
I mean, that to me, wow, is mind-boggling.
But we knew that. But, John, we knew that. Because
well,
we saw him last year dominate.
We didn't know how dramatic
we saw him dominate last year.
Honestly, I had forgotten how great he could be and how dominant he could be. And now you put him next to a motivated and much more in shape Jordan Davis. Wow. It, for the first time, it actually feels like, wow, it's a plan that's coming together,
well,
guys.
Well, to me, it's a little early to say that. I separate the two big time. I think Jalen Carter is way better than Jordan Davis.
The point that Ray was talking about, a lot of times we're in a nickel look, like just all four down, you know, let's go rush the passer. What we're doing now, we've got a very clear run-stopping look, and it's not just your standard 3-4, it's also what would be called a 5-2. You know, they're throwing some variety, some real, geez, honest to goodness, physics and heft. You know,
they played it great. It was a great defensive performance yesterday.
And you're covering up the center and both guards on some occasions. That makes it really hard for offenses to sort that out. You know, that bear look, or they also call it Navajo, they call it jam, that messes with the scheme. And Vic Fangio not only had his guys ready this week to play tougher, you know, to play a more rugged brand of football, but it was just smarter. You know, when they were trying to run it, we had more guys in the box, and we were varying the looks
We
were bringing guys off the edge at times with some tasteful times. I loved the way he called the game.